Becoming painfully obvious what Candace is doing, and I think it's effective. She's time releasing the information she has to apply maximum pressure. And I got to tell you, the people at TPUSA have to be absolutely freaking out. This revelation is stunning by Candace. But let's go back and let's review history. Do you remember before Israel fully retaliated for October 7th? Do you remember how the Hamas leaders were dying? Cell phones would blow up. Pagers would blow up. Do you remember that? Electronic sabotage. Keep that in mind as we get into the crux of the story. This is a game changer. We're brought to you by the NanoSomal Liquid Spray. Want help with your immune system? Oh, you can take all the vitamin C you want. It helps. This is better. This boosts your immune system to unbelievable levels. Polycosanol. And by the way, they're talking about now how to regenerate cells to increase longevity. But this is the chemical they're talking about. And it's one of the ingredients here. This spray cures nothing, but it's restorative and preventative because it boosts your immune system to unbelievable levels. Brought me back from death's doorstep, can help you too. Go to iwantmyhealthback.com/Dave Hodges. iwantmyhealthback.com/Dave Hodges. Okay, we have interesting dilemma here. We're going to go and just watch what Candace has to say here. And I got to tell you, she is a genius. I already had respect for her. I knew she was intelligent, but she's a master planner. She really is. And she's too honest, or I'd say the presidency lies ahead of her. But the right country doesn't own her, if you know what I mean. Let's take a look at
First, want to
Candace here, and we'll blow this up, and here we go.
tell you about this interesting question received yesterday from one of our viewers over on X that I wanted to address. He asked me specifically if I saw black plastic fragmentation over the floor of Charlie's SUV. I was immediately struck by this question because I am not kidding when I tell you that the very first thing that I noticed when I went through those photos of Charlie's SUV, I said to my team that it looked like there were shards of glass, like tempered glass that you might see if you drop or break an iPhone. It was very distinct to me in the picture from the blood that is all over the seats and all over the floor. I was like, oh, maybe like someone broke a window or something. And then I sort of put it out of my mind. And particularly, I noticed a lot of it spread across that back seat rear floor. So I'm going to show you that, just a couple of photos of that close up so that you can see it, what that looks like. Because, yeah, it was just kind of a compelling thing that he noticed something that I noticed, and you can see it was unusual. I think in this person's mind, the line that they were going down, I guess the line of questioning that they were going down in their own mind was, is this evidence that something broke on Charlie? Could something have been rigged? And I want to say that we can't necessarily extrapolate that from what we're looking at. It could be a thousand other things. Somebody could have actually broken a phone in there. Somebody could have had something in there. It could be broken hard candy. I mean, there's a lot going on. And yeah, but I did want to address that because it was interesting that he noted it and asked if we saw little black bits, and I do. That is visually what I see. I am hesitant, by the way, to put up the rest of the photos. Kind of still going through that. I want to be slow on that because obviously I don't want the federal officers, the good guys that are in there who have assisted in this, to be rumbled, right? I don't want people cash to go on a hunt and figure out who gave us what and people to start getting fired. We need to have the white knights in government. So I just need some time to think about that.
I totally agree with that last statement. Dan Bongino's quitting for a reason. He's quitting because of the lack of integrity for a job he left making lots of money, where he was doing great work, good for America. He walks away, makes a huge sacrifice to be the deputy director of the FBI, only to have it be exposed to the horse crap organization it is, and Kash Patel's right in the middle of it. He's no better than the previous directors. I mean, we could call him Cash Comey because he is pathetic and he needs to be fired yesterday. And I agree with Candace. I have to hesitate to come out and show you more of these photos. It shows even more because when the FBI comes and grabs the evidence, people could get fired. She got leaked stuff. And I got to tell you, I understand the pressure she's under because the insiders I've talked to are literally afraid for their lives. Literally. Begging me, oh, please, please don't give me away. Don't tell my gender. Don't tell me where I'm calling from. Don't tell me that you know, it was frightening to hear this fear in this person's voice I talked to. Now, they didn't give me this information. They gave me other information that Charlie had confided the day before the event that he thought the event was going to happen. He just didn't know when and where. He knew. Candace has picked up on very interesting info. And I just go back to what did we see in the pre-Gaza invasion with Hamas leaders? And I brought this up when I said, this ain't no 30-06. And I brought this up. I've also seen another video that I'm looking at. Now, this is speculation. This isn't hardcore evidence. But I see at the time the event happened, the precise moment, one of the security team is pressing a button on a device I can't make out. Could be just random coincidence, but there's a lot coming out. Isn't it interesting that people like Candace and other people are finding these amazing things that need to be explained, and yet the FBI wants us to believe the 30-06 magic bullet? It's amazing, isn't it? Kash Patel, you're pathetic. You should be fired just because you can't concoct a good cover story. Candace, again, great work. I know more is coming, and I think I know where this is headed, and I think we're basically going to get down to not a 30-06, but this. And I think it's becoming pretty clear. Well, I'm Dave Hodges. This is The Common Sense Show. If you've not signed up for our TV show, you should. TheCommonSenseShow.tv for the very best in investigative reporting. Also, to our newsletter, sitting out there for you to grab. You don't have to come back here for multiple publications a day. It can come to you in one email by going to thecommonsenseshow.com, click on the newsletter link in the upper right-hand corner, put in your email. That's all we need. And you'll get one email each and every day with everything we've done in the previous 24 hours. It's free and over 50,000 people doing it. Thanks for joining us. Thanks very much to Candace for her great work, and we'll see you back here again next time. Dave Hodges here, host of The Common Sense Show. Really glad to be with you. Thank you for joining us. We are the show. In case you haven't heard, we're freeing America one enslaved mind at a time, but you can help increase that number by sharing what we do because everything we do is digital. Well, have you ever wondered who's really the group behind the group? I've talked about this before. But it's interesting to me that someone who I can't mention his name, we'll call him Ralph, because he's asked for anonymity in past things, and this should be no exception. I can't show you his communication with me online. I'll have to read it. But this person, Ralph, wrote to me and said some pretty amazing things to say about who is behind what's going on. And I have a surprise ending. You're going to want to stay to the very end of this. We are indeed involved in a spiritual war. I believe you're either on Team Satan or Team Jesus. So I don't think there's any in between. And at the end of the day, it's good versus evil. And we do consume ourselves with talking about the political manifestations of this good versus evil struggle. But you have to fight the enemy where they're at. Sometimes it means you got to get down the gutter and fight with them if they're in the gutter. But ultimately, this is a battle for your soul. It's about the control of destiny in the future. And it's about coming someday, Armageddon. I don't know when, if it'll be my lifetime, your lifetime. I have no idea. Jesus said there will be signs of the end times. But he warned us against making predictions. In fact, he said so twice in the Bible. Don't make predictions. But I want to get down to who is really behind the evil. And before we go there, though, I just wanted to let you know we are brought to you by Noble Gold. And like I said, there's no other time in our history so desperate, so important that right now we should all be engaged in collecting assets that endure. Your fiat currency in the bank is subject to confiscation. So is your retirement if it's associated with the bank. What can you do? Well, you can get gold, you can get silver, and you should do it and do it yesterday. And I'm very, very serious. I sleep better at night knowing that I've got a decent sized portfolio. I don't have all my wealth transferred. I need to get more of it transferred. But listen, folks, if you keep your money in fiat cash, your future is going to be fiat. That means without backing. Noble Gold. I've been a customer for over 8 years. 877-646-5347. 877-646-5347. And if you forget the number, all you got to do is go to DaveHodgesGold.com. Well, let me read to you this very compelling email from my friend Ralph. We'll call him Ralph. It's not his real name. And I was discussing how I'm being messed with, and that's increasing since I have taken on the position that we're being lied to about Charlie Kirk and that TPUSA is not what they appear to be. They're not who they seem to be. I'll just put it that way. Okay. Ralph says in this program, he says, you mentioned that you've been messed with. And you've experienced that for many years. And he says, I've been through the same thing. The several big boys that are running things at the very top and setting policy for their underlings are not likely normal human beings. These dark side leaders remain nameless and hidden and may actually reside in weird places like the city of London, aka home of the Red Dragon in the Book of Revelation. I believe these dark side leaders are actually the Nephilim and the Nephilim human hybrids, and most of the harassment directed towards alt media truthers is done under the power of these dark side leaders. Often it starts preemptively in early childhood. They're politically connected, they're with crooked politicians, and these politicians are being protected by these dark side leaders and their evil forces. I wish this were not true, but I am convinced this is so. Because it's seemingly quite incredulous as to what they're up to. When we distill it down, it's actually a battle between good and evil. That's what I said. This person goes on to say, I've retired from work and also from the alt media, but pray for the righteousness to prevail in our society for my friends and the folks I respect and I'm concerned about. Since this is primarily a spiritual battle between the alt media, you and those who share your concerns, and these Satan-empowered dark side operatives, I suggest that you continue to pray and trust our Savior, Lord Jesus Christ, since this is where the greatest power actually is, and it is the only power great enough to foil these dark side operatives. I agree with that. I suggest you continue to walk in prayer and take it relaxed and slow, all the while trusting God Almighty will handle this for you according to his will and external love for you. According to the Bible, the days of these evildoers that serve the dark side are limited, and Jesus will completely defeat them all in good time. His timing. And signs it with a very nice salutation. I look at this and exactly right. Exactly right. Genesis 6, verse 4. And it talks about the Nephilim, and they're coming in and they breed with earth women. And so they breed, right? So human hybrids. But oh, didn't they get destroyed in the flood? No, they did not. At the end of Genesis 6, verse 4, it says, and they were there afterward. After what? Well, the next verse is about the flood. They're here, people. They're here, generations. And the evil continues to spawn within. I've often had a theory, and I'm just going to throw this out here. It's a wild theory. It's conjecture. But do you know how the royal families of Europe in the neighborhood of the Ross, if you know what I mean, how they always had to intermarry. I think you know where I'm going with this. And that's the divine right of kings, right? Self-appointed gods. Yes, exactly. See, we're not God. We should be serving God. But these entities want to be gods. This led to Lucifer's rebellion in the heavens, which caused them to be cast to earth. And now we're involved in this monumental struggle. And many people can be brought to their side. And this is where I want to go with this. I have talked to you, and Sarah Westall and I, Doug Thornton and I, have talked to you all in our audiences about the fact that not everyone in the alt media is what they appear to be. Now, I don't know that they're part of the hybrids. But what I do know is some of them serve them, whether they're members of them or not. And the reality is this. They can be bought off very easily, very cheaply. And what did Judas get? 30 pieces of silver to betray the Son of God? Some people sell themselves very cheaply. And we're seeing that in real time right now in the alt media. And I'm asking you to pray for discernment on who you should trust and who you should not trust, because here's why this is important. They say MAGA's had a huge split. Okay, well, that's the mainstream media, and they benefit from that because their benefactors benefit from it. The reality is we have some consternation in the movement. There's no question. Is it an irrevocable split so big it can't be healed? No, not even close. Not even close. But we must be as united as possible going into the midterms, because if these evildoers and the communist allies that they support, if they're able to win the midterm elections, they will impeach Trump. It'll be all over. It'll be a quick descent into communism, because this is what they are. And communism is Satanism. And it's accompanied by body bags. That's what history teaches us. And I referenced earlier the University of Hawaii Democide Project. Case in point. Use your discernment. Now, I am beginning to disagree with Marjorie Taylor Greene. I don't think she serves the evil ones. I think she's hurt, angry, and bitter. I think President Trump could have handled her a little differently, and this might have had a different outcome. She's not the kind of person I'm talking about. But she's going a little off the deep end, in my humble opinion, now, because everything Trump is doing, she's criticizing, and it's the beginnings of Trump derangement syndrome in her case. And she has done great work in the past. I hate to see her go down this path. If you want to be able to be free as an American, and honestly, if you want to live, if you want to live, read my lips. You want Trump to control Venezuelan oil so the Chinese don't get it. You want Trump to be able to control Iranian oil to the point where the Chinese don't get it. I don't mean we deprive the people of those countries. Quite the contrary. I think we should be entering into legitimate business operations, helping them refine their production capabilities and increase profits for everybody and improve the standard of living in their countries. But you let this fall into China with their silver advantage, their rare earth mineral advantage applied to defense spending, the military, they will conquer us. And I'm going to remind you of a leaked speech that I was given, John Moore, other people, friends of mine. Wei Fang, the defense minister, 2017, I published the leaked speech. And like I said, it went to other people too. And we did eventually find out our source, which was DOD. They wanted the public to know. Wei Fang says, we owe a lot to America. They protected us from Japan and rescued our nation and returned it to what it should have been. Guess we did. We even had the Flying Tigers over there helping the Chinese fight the Japanese when we weren't even at war with Japan. So yes, we have tried to help China. We built China into what they are today. Now, it was for the benefit of the Fortune 500 corporations that wanted to offshore labor for cheap costs and so forth and so on. But China was the beneficiary of that, and they should be saying thank you to America instead of We hate you, America. Now, Wei Fang came out and said, we appreciate America for all these things. But the reality is this. We do not have the resources we need to maintain our population. We can't expand our economy beyond a regional level, except in a few exceptions. We need natural resources. Oh, by the way, this is what caused Japan to invade its neighbors before World War II in the 1930s, especially when they went into Manchuria. It was for natural resources. China was making the same noises through their defense minister, Wei Fang. And he said, we plan to occupy America, and we don't plan to share it. Do you know what that means, people? Do you know what that means? It's what communists always do. Body bags. Something he said interesting, too. He said, there are 14 million Chinese in America. We have yet to decide what we're going to do with them. That was all part of that speech. Now, I come back and I ask you again, do you want that oil, Venezuela and Iran, to go to China so they can project the military advantages they're going to have because of silver until we can catch up? And we might not catch up for 10 years. And you notice today Trump seized two Venezuelan tankers. It's not piracy on the high seas. It's called war at war with China. And we're limiting their ability to come into our hemisphere and attack us. And I'm telling you, Latin America is on notice. And see, this is what the Democrats don't want. They want the fall of America so they can install their communist utopian. But the reality, folks, is this, is that if we allow these communist dictatorships in Latin America to flourish, the movie Red Dawn, the one from the 80s, is going to become our reality. And people like Claudia Sheinbaum in Mexico, who is absolutely allowing the cartel to send as much fentanyl to kill young men of fighting age in America, she's a part of it. She's a part of it. If she can't control it, she should say to Trump, we'd welcome your help. These people aren't part of our Mexican society. They're outlaws and criminals. We want nothing to do with them. But she doesn't do that because she's part of them. Just like Nieto, who was testified in El Chapo's trial right here in America, that Nieto took over $100 million in bribes from the cartels to look the other way and to provide assistance when requested. See, this is what we're facing in Latin America. You got the Chinese building surveillance in Cuba. You've got Chile now signing a defense pact with Iran. That's crazy. That's crazy. It's because they need the Chinese influence. Chinese have come in and done Belt and Road in Chile, and Chile's beholding to them. Brazil is beholding to them. Nicaragua is beholding to them. Sometimes I feel like the only friend we have is El Salvador. Nicaragua is a rogue state. Panama has Chinese troops in it. They don't want them there, but the Chinese refuse to leave, and they're exploiting their natural resources. And the Panama Canal, that's a big deal, is it not? So we go through this, and I'm saying you are looking at a Chinese-sponsored Red Dawn invasion scenario in the offing for the future. And so it's not about Trump being a fascist, imperialistic dictator. This is a war of self-defense against the Chinese. And let's back up. If you think I'm jumping to an exaggerated point here, let's consider this. Fentanyl killing young American males, largely in their 20s, that would comprise our fighting force in a war. Brought to you by China, courtesy of the Claudia Sheinbaum ignored cartels. This is evil personified. And evil is behind this. I went from evil to geopolitics, and now I'm back to the spiritual. The people, or the entities, I should say, behind this are evil. And I believe they're the ones talked about in Genesis 6, verse 4. And this is a time when, do I disagree with Trump on? Yeah. The investigation into Charlie Kirk was a frickin' joke, and Kash Patel should be shown the door. I disagree with Donald Trump on that greatly. But I will tell you what I don't disagree with. He's fighting to save your life. The Weifang warnings weren't just Weifang. It was also the words of the three defense ministers that preceded him and the two that have come since him. This is Chinese national policy. And if it wasn't, then what the hell is fentanyl about? You're involved in a spiritual war that's manifested in the physical. I don't know what Trump can do about the spiritual, but he's doing a heck of a lot about the physical. And I would say this to the leadership in Iran. You better book your flight to Moscow while you can get it. I'm Dave Hodges. This is The Common Sense Show. And thanks to my friend Ralph for that very insightful note. Always appreciate having people approach me with wisdom and guidance. And I'm just going to say this, ladies and gentlemen, if we get on our knee, bend the knee to the Lord and pray for forgiveness, redemption, guidance, we can be a great nation again. The way to make America great again is not to fight endless wars, because the evil will never stop coming. The way is through the Lord Jesus Christ. Pray for his return. Hello, everybody. Dave Hodges here. I'm the host of The Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. Really good to be with you. We're coming to you live from the Noble Gold Studios. Hey, listen, do what I do. Protect your wealth. There is so much going on right now. Call Noble Gold, 877-646-5347, 877-646-5347. Get the peace of mind that I've got. They're the sponsor for today's show, and today's show is going to be a blockbuster. We have a return visit from Shaheen Gobadi, and he is an NCRI parliament representative who's in exile, and I believe he's still probably in France, but he may be returning to Iran. There are dramatic events going on, and we know we're going to have a large audience for this because I hyped this show last night on John B. Wells. I've put it out on our social media. This is a crucial interview. And folks, I'm telling you, the world's changing before our eyes, and Iran is the next domino to fall. Shaheen, thank you so much for joining us. Really good to be with you. And are you still located in France, in exile?
Yes, I am. And thanks for having me, Dave. And before we go on, allow me to wish you and all your good listeners and viewers and happy and prosperous New Year. And as you said, let's hope 2026 will be the year for the Iranians to celebrate freedom.
Yeah, we actually spoke not real long before the joint attack on Iranian nuclear facilities under construction. And we knew this was coming, but you also said something very prophetic. You said the people have turned on this government. It's extremely unpopular. And now we're seeing the manifestation of what you said several months ago. Talk to us about the current state of affairs inside of Iran with the people.
You see, there has been protests and uprising in the last 11 days, and now it has spread to more than 130 cities and towns throughout Iran in all 31 provinces. So it's by all definition a nationwide uprising. And basically, if one only listens to the people's chants, their desire and their demand is very clear. They want a regime change. They chant slogans like down with dictator, down with Khamenei, who is the supreme leader. This year is the year of blood and Khamenei will be overthrown. And also, I think what's very important is that people are chanting down with oppressor, be it the Shah or the supreme leader. So basically, they are very, very clearly, explicitly, unequivocally saying they don't want to go back to the time of monarchy. They want a democratic republic. So this is the mood in Iran today, and this is what people are striving for, despite all the risks and all the crackdown.
And let me tell you the reports I'm getting, too. I'm getting reports that the army representing the government cannot maintain control in the country, and there are towns and villages that have basically taken over their own area and the military is nowhere to be found. Is that true?
Actually, yes. There were three towns and cities last night that they were overtaken by the people. Obviously, the regime will try to take them back, but the fact of the matter that they were taken over by the people and they're all invested in Iran, I think is very, very significant. It shows that not only people are very much more bold in what they want, but also it shows that the regime is much more susceptible and much weaker. And I think that's very important that people, that the fear is shifting side, that now the people who are on the move and the regime is very much worried. And the fact that the protests are happening in 130 cities and towns, I think strategically is also very important because this not does not give the regime the ability to amass its repressive forces in one, two, three, four, five, locations. Basically, when the people come in the streets in excuse me, in huge numbers like this, and one has to keep in mind we are talking about not one particular strata of the society. We have people from all walks of life and all age groups, all united and rallying behind the same slogans. I think that's a momentous shift in what we are witnessing.
It's amazing because it's happening just as you predicted several months ago. What will replace? Let me verify a rumor here. I'm getting from multiple sources, and some of them are really well placed, that the leadership in Iran is in communications with Putin's people to go into exile in Moscow. Is there any truth to that rumor?
Well, I don't have anything to add to that, basically, and I've read the news reports to that effect, basically. But I think what's important is to realize that the regime is really weak. This is what happened. After the 2022 uprising, the balance of power shifted. The Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei knew that the way things were going, he was in a slippery slope, and he was getting weaker and weaker. He tried to change that momentum by regional adventurism. And that was a huge strategic mistake. And we saw what happened to the regime's proxies, most notably by the overthrow of Bashar Assad regime in Syria, which was the regime's linchpin in the region, and what happened to Hezbollah. So the regime resorted to another scheme, and that was massive, massive executions. So that they will stem this tide of uprising. And that utterly failed as well. So the fact that the regime has basically lost all of its strategic resources is a very, very correct observation. On the other hand, I think what exacerbates the regime's concern is the growth of the resistance units inside the country. That despite all the crackdown, despite all the killings, despite all the arrests and torture, the resistance units affiliated to the People's Mujahideen Organization of Iran, which is the principal Iranian resistance movement, has been growing significantly and exponentially. That makes the regime very much worried because there is a organized resistance on the ground, striving, growing, leading, giving direction to the protests, and acting like the tip of the arrow. And that's what makes the whole situation much more worrisome.
Let me get a feel for where we're at right now, because I know you've mentioned the executions, the tortures, and the mass arrests and so forth. Is the government currently employing things like blackouts, total media censorship? Is that where the current status is?
Obviously, there has always been censorship in Iran. The Iranian regime is one of the, in terms of censorship, is one of the highest in the whole world. But Iranian people have been able to circumvent that by using different methods like VPNs and the others. So they get the word out, and they also get the word from outside world about what's happening. So what I'm saying is that Iranians are very well versed about what's happening in the international community, and they also have been able to get the information out. For instance, the resistance units have been, and resistance network, I should rather say, has been very active and successful getting the news out of Iran very quickly and quite extensively. So, yes, the regime has resorted to all sorts of crackdown, but it has failed.
You know, it's interesting to me is when Assad was under continual bombardment from his people, And initially, the Russians came in and intervened and helped him. But we're not seeing any evidence of Russian interference in this movement, are we?
No, absolutely not. And one has to keep in mind that Iranian situation is very different. Iran is a huge, huge country. We're talking about a country of 87, 88, and to some estimates, 90 million people. And geographically, it's a huge country. So in that sense, Russia is in actually no regime in the world, no government in the world is in a position to help the mullahs. And also, politically speaking, nobody has any interest to save such a regime. It's very true that for decades the policy was placating this regime. There were a lot of unwarranted, unjustifiable, and I would say illegitimate concessions made to the regime, and that very much helped to prolong the survival of this regime. But nobody has any strategic interest in this regime, and especially at this time of age, that the regime is so weak and its weakness is so evident, nobody will rush to save such a regime, and regime realizes this fully well. So they cannot rely on nobody. As I said, Assad is gone. The regional proxies are very much, if I don't say decimated, very much weakened severely. So the regime is simply on its own.
I want to ask you something that and I bet you haven't been asked this yet, but yesterday, surprise move, Chile signed a defense pact with Iran. Can you explain to us any rationale why Chile would do something seemingly so meaningless?
I really don't know. I cannot add any insight to this. But as I said, look, Dave, what's happening? I think the key factor, as you mentioned very correctly from the beginning of this conversation, is what's happening on the ground, on the streets. And that's where the regime, obviously, in terms of political sentiment and people's sympathy, long time ago had lost that battle. But now, actually, in the streets, on the ground, they are losing. People are taking over cities and towns. And look, for 11 days, the regime has not been able to contain the protests. It first started in Tehran, in the Grand Bazaar, the backbone of the traditional backbone of the Iranian economy. But it grew in a matter of a few hours throughout Tehran. And then, in a matter of a few hours, it has spread to other cities. And a lot of metropolitans got involved. But also, very importantly, it got to smaller towns and smaller cities throughout the country. And you have to keep in mind, Iran is a multi-ethnic nation, quite diversified. But despite all of that, when it comes to protests and slogans, people are very much unified. So I think these are hallmarks of a nation which is really, really determined to bring about a change by itself. And you have to keep in mind that as of this morning, we have documented at least 33 protesters who have been slain, four of them teenagers, as young as 15, who have been killed by the regime repressive forces simply because they want democracy and freedom. Yet people, keep coming back in this to the streets, keep coming back to the streets, and much more demanding and much more courageous. And I think this is the factor. This is the game changer. And in all of this, as I said, the resistance units affiliated to the People's Mujahideen Organization of Iran, which is the principal Iranian resistance movement, have been playing a very, very key role. They are what are called the unsung heroes, who are, leading the protests, giving it direction, giving it momentum, giving it impetus. And that's what makes the regime, as I said, very worried.
You mentioned before in our earlier interview months ago that there were basically two separate militaries in Iran, and I hope I'm expressing that correctly. One of them is smaller in number and they're extremely loyal to the leadership. The other is more of a civilian army and maybe not so loyal. Do you think the not so loyalists in the bigger regime are going to be the ones that unseat the power that's in charge right now?
Actually, it's the people's uprising, what I call a revolution, grassroots revolution that will unseat the regime.
Okay.
But when comes the tipping point, when it becomes evident that the balance of power has shifted. Obviously, we will witness a lot of desertions, a lot of defections. This is
That's right.
very typical in the last stages, and we have seen this before in history. But until then, obviously, people only rely on people, and as I said, their own forces and the resistance. And that's exactly, I think, is important. You see, for years and years, this notion, this concept that the people and the resistance are the key factor have been ignored when it comes to understanding the Iranian paradigm. And now it's quite evident that it's the streets that are deciding the fate. It's quite evident that the people in the streets are the ones who will determine the future. And as I said, you can see signs of some IRGC forces. You can see some of the police, some of the military. Obviously, when they see this wave and wave of people, obviously they will be very much more, I would say, worried about their future. They will be less willing to fight for the supreme leader. As they see the regime's status is ebbing and ebbing and ebbing, obviously there will be more inclination to join the people. And that's quite a natural trend that, as I said, we have witnessed in the past in history in other countries.
You just captured my next question, because typically in revolutions, the pattern is when the people's resistance becomes so overwhelming numerically and with resources, that the opposition forces and the military and the police usually lay down their arms and join the people. Are we anywhere close to seeing that happen?
Obviously, I don't know what you mean by close, but we have seen a lot of places that especially anti-riot forces are not willing to fight as they used to. They are less willing to put their own lives on the line because they know it's much more dangerous for them. The issue is survival. And I'm sure as the trend continues, you will see more of these. So we have not seen a massive defection yet, but there are signs that there are quite clear signs of cracks in the regime's repressive apparatus. But so far as the regime is concerned, they will continue cracking down, they will continue killing people, they will do anything, I would say, as sad as it is conceivable, to prevent the downfall of the regime. But as I said, today it's already 11 days that people are on the streets battling throughout the country. And I have to emphasize the scope of it is growing. I think that's very important.
Yes, obviously, that's what you're describing here with the multitude
Exactly.
across the country.
Growing. And also age groups. And also look at the composition. You have traditional merchants, bazaaris, which are typically middle class, upper middle class, who, because of the regime's policies, are now very much destituted. They're just on the brink of poverty, just on the brink of bankruptcy because of the regime's policies. You have them. You have urban poor, people who simply cannot make their ends meet. And then you have intelligentsia, which are universities and academics. And the combination of these three not only makes a big cross-section of the society, but also it is the regime's nightmare because they are the force for change.
You very well interpreted my next question, but I would like to add on to what I was going to ask you. It seems like the economy was the driver, although as the body count rises, that's going to become the main motivator. But the economy sounds like it's the driver. Do you have any figures on unemployment or inflation rates, what the people in Iran are dealing with?
Exactly. I think that's very important. This time, the protests are on the very, very basic needs of survival of the people. You see, people have come to a point that they're dealing with a regime which simply cannot deliver their most basic needs for survival. Allow me to elaborate. Iranian currency is riyals. It has lost its value vis-a-vis US dollars 70% in 1 year. And why it matters? Food is imported, medicine is imported. So basically, people have to pay, more than double the price. And you can imagine if inflation like this in any sensible country, what will happen to the people? This is one case. Annual inflation rate is about officially 43, 45%, but But some of the most basic staples, it's more than 100%. 100%. Now, for the people with low income, people with a fixed income, government employees, retirees, pensioners, that speaks volume. Corruption is so rampant, huge, and it's all tied to the top echelon of the regime, the regime's cronies and IRGC top generals. They're the ones who do the massive, massive embezzlement and corruption. So that adds to the people's problems. Now you have the regime is having even difficulty providing people's running water. And we are talking about a metropolitan like Tehran, which has more than 10 million population. And even running water becomes a problem. This is, 25 years after the 21st century. You can imagine, the regime basically has run aground. Now, there's a power outages on a daily basis. Each year, because of the air pollution, 60,000 Iranians lose their lives. And this is in the statistics from the state media. I mean, no work. The young generation is facing like 50% unemployment. If you put all of this together, you can see that basically people have no hope for the future. Every day is worse than yesterday, and tomorrow is worse than today. So people have had it, let's put it like this. And culturally speaking, there's a long culture and heritage of resistance for 47 years, organized resistance. It has been persistent. And this also, from a mentality perspective, perception point of view, is very much helping people. They have a good concept of how to stand up against the current theocracy and the previous monarchy. So what I'm saying is, you have it's a huge social economic crisis for the regime, and on top of that, people's good understanding of what's happening. And for a big revolution, you need all of this plus an organized resistance, which is there on the ground, and a viable alternative in the National Council of Resistance of Iran. So how I would describe the situation, I would say this is the confluence of mega crises at the same time for the mullahs.
Yes, I totally agree. But let's look at going forward now. Assuming the regime collapses, and I think that's inevitable, and they flee to Russia, will the NCRI, the organization that you're a part of, will they come in and assume control? And then I'm going to assume you'd hold elections, but is that the plan?
Absolutely. The NCRI, you see, this is the whole point, that there would not be any chaos. There is a very clear plan for transitional period, which would be the National Council of Resistance of Iran. Its president is Madam Maryam Rajavi. She has a very, very clear 10-point plan for the transitional period, like separation of government and religion, total freedom, freedom of association, freedom of thought, total gender equality, a non-nuclear Iran, a market economy, autonomy for all the ethnic regions, in particular the Kurdish region, good, mutual, amicable, friendly relationship with the rest of the world. This is all articulated. But the main task of this transitional government, as you said, is to set the stage for a free and fair election to choose the next national and constituent assembly. So a new government that is elected by the people, for the people, will come in to start drafting the new resolution. And at that moment, the role of the NCRI and the resistance is finished, and a new chapter will begin, and we will be in a new path. And in order to make everything being smooth, as I said, there's a very clear plan for a transitional period. The leader for that transitional period will be Madam Maryam Rajavi, to actually guarantee that this transition happens like this, and to make sure that they will have a free and fair election where the a ballot box would be the and the ultimate arbiter, with free campaigning, all of this, something very, very modern, very democratic, which Iranians deserve, with no official religion or religion not being an issue for privilege or discrimination, no privilege discrimination based on gender. So basically, yes, there is a plan, and it's all articulated. I just mentioned very, very the tidbits, I would say. It's all
Okay.
details about, what the transition should be.
I know the answer to this question, but for my American audience, I have to ask this question. Okay, and you've been quite clear in the past on this. You have no desire for assistance with American boots on the ground in Iran, correct?
Absolutely. By the way, there's no need. As simple
Exactly.
as there's no need. People are battling in the streets themselves. There's no need for boots on the ground. There's no need for weapons. There's no need for American money. All we need is a good policy. Now, what is a good policy? A good policy is to come out and say, look, we recognize the right of the Iranian people and the resistance to stand up against the regime's crimes, to battle IRGC, and to bring down the regime by themselves for themselves. I think this is very much in line with the US Constitution. This is very much in line with what your founding fathers stood for and fought for. And this is exactly in line of what your founding fathers did. So what I'm saying is, and I think every good American can identify with this, that this is inalienable right of Iranians to be given and stipulated their right to fight against such a regime and to take the future in their own hands.
I can tell you that my audience is rooting for you, as am I, because you have a sound and rational approach. And in this world where political views change with the winds, you've been extremely consistent since the first time that we have spoken about your plan to make things right in Iran. And you have such a great future. You've got great mineral resources. You've got a fairly well-educated population and people that are motivated for change. I mean, I think Iran could be a real player in the world stage under the right leadership. And it's just a shame that the people are, there's going to be more people die before the transition happens. And I pray here from my perspective that there's minimal violence and maximal change. And I really congratulate you on where we were months ago with this issue versus where we are now. There's been tremendous progress, and that's to the strength of the Iranian people. And I look forward to you guys transitioning Iran and becoming a player and an ally to the United States.
Thank you so much, Dave, for having me. I urge people to go to the website of the NCRI, is ncriran.org, or go to the Twitter account of Madam Maryam Rajavi. It's Maryam, Maryam underscore Rajavi, Rajavi, and to follow her because she const we keep the people abreast of what's happening based on the information constantly we get from inside Iran. I think the voice of the Iranian resistance has to be heard and has to be echoed. And I think this time of age in social media, people can express themselves. And as I said, that's where they can find us on the website. There's also a website for Madam Maryam Rajavi and her Twitter account, and also for NCRI. And I think that's important that people to see that a new Iran is emerging from what's happening in the streets of Iran, day in and day out.
I think it's profoundly intelligent that your leader is a female. Here in America, we wouldn't blink an eye to that. But I know the history of Iran, recent history, and this is very profound. And I think it's symbolic of the change that you want to bring for the better in Iran. And I congratulate you on your progress. I wish you continued luck. And let's hope this transition happens sooner rather than later so we minimize the loss of life.
Thanks a lot for all your good wishes. And once again, Happy New Year to you and
Thank you.
your very good viewers and listeners. May God bless you all. And let's hope that, as I said, 2026 will be the year of freedom. And then we will have a very different talk.
Okay. Yeah, we're once this is transition, I'd like to get you back on because yeah, we've been rooting for you the whole time. And ladies and gentlemen, our guest has been Shaheen Gobadi. And since you heard our first interview, he's made a lot of progress. His organization is on the verge. So let's pray for a successful conclusion. Thank you so much for joining us.
Have a nice day. Thank you.
Take care.